Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome back to Deconstructive Criticism. My name is Aaron Flam. This episode's guest is Canadian comedian and enfant terrible Jason Rouse. Today's conversation will be about Jason, where he comes from, how he became a comedian, and why he decided to record his special in Denmark, of all places. You see, the interview was recorded in Los Angeles, Monday, the 6th of January 2020. When I booked the trip to LA in the summer of 2019, I booked direct flights from Sweden and back. Coming to Los Angeles was a direct flight on December 26th of 2019, but my flight on the way back was changed. The reason for this is that during fall, Stockholm lost the direct line to Los Angeles, and that line now goes from Copenhagen, Denmark, rather than Stockholm, LA. And so, on my return from America, I had the privilege of flying on the premier flight, inaugurating the new line. Earlier, Sweden had lost the Fashion Week to Copenhagen, and this episode's guest, Jason Rouse, chose to record his comedy special in Copenhagen rather than Stockholm, despite having lived in Sweden for years previously in his life. It was when he lived in Stockholm that I and Jason got to know each other. I don't want to make too much of Sweden losing out on a direct flight between LA and Stockholm, since I don't fly to LA on a regular basis, but taken together with a lot of other small things, it seemed to be a sign of the times. Sweden, once the cultural superpower of Scandinavia, has been losing out for years, and it also seems that we are losing to Denmark in film, TV, comedy, and now flights. I wanted to interview Jason for two reasons. The first reason is that I have always loved Jason's comedy and I wanted to know more about him, but unfortunately, Jason suffers from a condition that makes it nigh on impossible for him to be serious for more than a few seconds at a time. And the second is that I wanted to know his reason for recording his comedy special in Copenhagen, Denmark, rather than Stockholm, Sweden, where he had a base for so many years and know quite a few people. Jason Rouse is the jester from hell, where I suppose is where he also buys his clothes. He describes himself as a renegade touring stand-up comedian, taking the mainstream comedy world and turning it upside down. Over the last decade, this comedy outsider has been sharpening his teeth in clubs and festivals all over the world. Rouse has made it his mission to forge a new road and write a new chapter in stand-up comedy. Middle-of-the-road mainstream comedy is left for dead. Instead, this jester from hell has been unleashed onto the international stages with all of the power of a derailed comedy freight train. It is quite an apt description, and I could not have done a better job writing my own description of him. Getting people to laugh is a hard job, and Jason Rouse has never made it easier for himself by looking the way he does and joking about the things you are no longer supposed to joke about. He does not compromise with his comedy. But before we delve into the dark pits of Jason Rouse's life and mind, I want to thank you who supports Deconstructive Criticism on Patreon, via PayPal, Bitcoin, or Swish 0768943737. 0768943737. If you haven't done it yet, please pause this podcast and donate now. If you want something more material for your support, other than the warm fuzzy feeling you get from giving me monetary support, I suggest you surf on to aaronflam.com, where I sell wonderful t-shirts with uplifting messages like Crush Socialism, albeit in Swedish, or this podcast's motto, Your Feeling Are Hurting My Thoughts. If you read Swedish, I also suggest you order a copy of the book This is a Swedish Tiger. So far, you can only get it in Swedish, but the translation into English will be done in the coming weeks, and I am searching the heavens and earth for a publisher in England, the US, Germany, Denmark, Norway, and the Netherlands. Something I'm pretty sure I'll be able to find, considering what a bestseller the book has become in Sweden. The second edition is now sold out, and if you're looking to buy a copy of the third edition in Swedish, I suggest you place your order now, since they are selling like hotcakes. Thank you again for supporting my work. Two more interviews in English from LA will be released in the coming weeks. Next up is Thaddeus Russell, but now, Jason Rouse. Enjoy. Welcome to Deconstructive Criticism, Jason Rouse.
Is this an actual show title or an episode?
No, this
is... And why are you salivating as you look across? You've been waiting for this for a long time.
This is an actual... That's the name of the podcast.
Is it?
Yes.
This
Deconstructive Criticism.
So I should assume that you're, you know, with your little notebook, you got a whole, this, I'm having like...
I have a small notebook and I have a large notebook.
All right.
Large notebook is the notebook full of questions for you, Jason.
This scenario, from where I, my perspective, at a glance, and yet I trust you with my life, oddly enough.
Well, you have very poor judgment.
Nah, I think when it really came down to hard decisions, I know you wouldn't tell on me, Aaron.
No, I wouldn't. I'd never tell on you.
You're not a tattletaler.
When people ask me, does he have hair under that cap? I say, yeah, sure he does. A full head of hair.
I haven't had hair under that hat since I was 7.
That is true. But and
I grew up in a chemical wasteland.
See, I'm
panicking.
Yeah, I know you are, because you're about to be serious for a few minutes. It's like 50 minutes, maybe.
All right.
Can you stay serious for 50 minutes? You don't have to. I mean, but we're going to try.
Instinctually, I'm an entertainer.
Yeah, I know that. And I know that because I know you, Jason, and I've tried to tape you 4 times previously.
Mm.
Yes, it has never been aired. And I am hoping that this will be the one that we can actually air.
I'll settle.
So I know you, but my audience does not know you. So I'll ask you the same question that I ask every guest I have on Deconstructive Criticism. It is a very broad question, and you're free to interpret it any way, shape, or form you like. So the question is simply this, Jason.
It's never the question, it's the pause.
So the question is this: who are you?
Who am I?
Yes.
You know, whatever they say I am.
No, don't do that. Okay, so let's do this. Where do you come from?
Good start. Because I think that's very poignant in the question you asked me earlier, was who am I now? I think I would definitely say a lot of the things in environment in the city that I grew up at that time shaped me into a person that has brought me to this magical place, literally.
Oh, okay, so just to be specific, what city was that?
There you go. Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. It's about, I'm having to slide in my Canadianisms. It's in Canada, about an hour outside of Toronto. Worlds apart, especially from 71 to 93. I was born, I actually just celebrated a birthday a week ago.
Yes, I know. You turned
48.
Is that true?
That's true. December.
Or are you like subtracting 40 years?
No. Because December 31st, 1971 brings us to 48.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
So was Hamilton a working class city at that time?
Very much. Steel town, like fucking Fury Road. It was like Fury Road meets... You know, my school, when I saw the TV show Orange is the New Black, Orange is the New Black, I was like, that's what my high school was. without the jumpsuits.
You went to high school in a girls' prison.
A girls' prison. kind of, in a way. Because it was high school kids, there was a different type of warfare going on there. It was all dudes, and it was probably one of the worst high schools in the country at that time. Not to mention, I think they just, somebody sent me a picture of it, bulldozed. They just grassed it. It'd been closed for a number of years. And but between a city of like, dude, I was like Kevin Bacon in Footloose. Like it was fucked. Like, you know, my whole academic career was spent in a lot of situations like this with somebody sitting across the table trying to dissect me in some sort of psychological title.
Well, you're very hard to pin down, as you should be, since you're kind of a trickster.
I'm not a trickster. I just don't want to be pinned down. I don't want to be in a situation where I'm... the more people make ideas about me, the more I reject them.
And what has that done to you?
Rejection?
Well,
clarity.
Considering that I'm sitting in front of a very thin, good-looking, healthy-looking man in his late 40s.
Thank you for pandering to my ego.
Yeah, who has on him, he's dressed completely in black, hung with pentagrams, Satanism symbols. You have a thick necklace of silver skulls around your neck.
But all this stuff at a glance looks very... demonic, sinister, even, you know, what? A lot of this stuff has very symbolic, like this necklace, for instance. When I first come to Los Angeles, 2001, the National Film Board of Canada was following me around for a year and a half and did a documentary on myself and four or five other comics. And I remember being just in the awe of the idea being in Hollywood, not to mention a very well-known comedy manager was had me in mind for this, and I was doing showcases and what have you. And like I said, Hamilton was such a post-apocalyptic environment. And when I saw this necklace in a jewelry store, I remember it was during Passover because these old broads gave me a cut. They goes, "Give me a Passover special." I'm like, "Perfect, I'll take the Passover special."
So, all right.
I remember there were two sisters, and they were fucking hilarious in this jewelry store. I'll go in there. I bet you these old broads still fucking work there. And I was already 90% sold on the item. It's a silver chain with some skulls on it. I've had it on since my first trip to L.A. in 2001. And these two fucking Abbott and Costello old broads were making me laugh so much. It was just – I felt – it was the right thing to do, and I've never taken it off. It's kind of a lucky charm. Now, on a table, it looks like Satan's anal beads, but you know what I mean?
Yes.
But and always the dark colors just got to it became practical. You know, as a traveler, I didn't want to have to mishmash. I wanted to look, you know, polished and professional on stage, and I didn't want to have a costume changes of fucking colors and bullshit. So it started to come back to my skateboard Metallica obsessions of the 80s, you know. So I kind of went back to that, and it just seemed to make more sense. So always something shiny and silver and as black as I can find. So much so that there's parts of the year where I'll get a bucket and pour in black dye and throw all my clothes in it to get it back to dead.
But when did you start doing comedy?
It's actually June of this year will be 25 years.
So how old were you when you started?
I was 25.
That's pretty old, isn't it? I was 27, so I'm not. It's not like I'm throwing stones in glass houses.
Perfect timing. It really, I was lucky to get it at 25, because I think when I left Hamilton, when I fled my hometown, I don't know if you can see my nose, but it's been crushed a couple of times, broken hands, stabbed, stitches. Beer bottles, you know, my body in my 20s was like of a longshoreman who'd just been in bar fights most of his life. And
because you had been in bar fights most of your life?
No, not so much so. I learned very early on that my,
your quick mouth?
Yes and no. That got me into trouble when I was drunk, but I had a kind of a crew of people around me that were very serious folks. So I never really ran into the one-on-one stuff, but I saw enough of it. And because of my reputation in the company that I kept, no one really fucked with me at all. And I had to reinvent myself. You know, I started comedy in Vancouver with Seth Rogen.
Really?
He had started, we were in open mics together. We took.
But he must have been much younger than you, right?
Yeah. There was a comedy workshop. I didn't know. Like I said, I left Hamilton.
25 years old.
No.
Your pockets are filled with nothing but dreams.
I was 22 when I left Hamilton. And I had to, I spent it to move to Vancouver. And then I spent a 2-year period leading up to my first stand-up performance, trying to figure out who I was and what I wanted, what really made me happy, and started trying to attract those type of things.
But how did you think up? How did you come to the conclusion that comedy was something you wanted to try?
Because I love the aspect that was the only thing that I had kind of any kind of control over in my life. I grew up in a very, turbulent thing, and that's what allowed me to be a bit of a social chameleon. A lot of my social circles are very over the bend. You'd have no idea.
I would have no idea.
Well, I think you can speculate, but my reach is far and wide, Aaron.
I bet. By now you're probably have been voted onto the Royal Fisting Society of Great Britain.
and everything below that.
Yeah. but I'm just trying to understand. So were you always funny?
No, I was always a shit disturber. I think probably the result of some sort of post-traumatic stress. You know, people develop quirks and personality traits through experiences they have as they move through life.
Yes.
And I wasn't going to kill people, so I had to make them laugh.
All right. But did you discover that you had this talent, or because you are talented?
I had the talent, the aspect to get people's attention, and then once I had eyes on me, it would put me in a position of pressure to manifest something in a negative or positive, and through trial and error, probably as a kid too, And then a lot of late night comedy that I was seeing, but then I'd see a little bit of Sam Kinison or these kind of like explosive, off the rails, Tuck and Red Fox. I always loved the kind of heroin jazz Lenny Bruce thing. I thought that's fucking legit. That's cool. And I wanted to do that, where friends of mine were getting married and things like that, or getting grateful to have a job in a factory, which I have no problem any hard labor. You know what I mean?
You want to avoid it, but you don't.
No, I didn't want to avoid it. I thought I was too smart for it. Okay. I was too smart to do, and I've had jobs, and I'd go back. If someone said, hey, can you come and help me put a roof on for a month? I'd be like, yeah, let's do that.
I'm glad you mentioned two of your references, because that was, in fact, my next question.
If I was a roofer?
No. you mentioned Sam Kinison and Lenny Bruce.
Yeah,
and I was going to ask you, like, what are your comedic references?
My comedic references, in stand-up?
Any comedic references? I'm trying to find out who you are as a comedian.
Idolized, I love the song and dance man of Martin Short, coincidentally, from my hometown.
Really?
Eugene Levy. From the Hammer, that's what we call Hamilton.
No, for real?
Yeah, for real.
So Hamilton is like a place
with
a
disproportionate
amount of comedians.
Pressure makes diamonds. Pressure makes diamonds.
But Martin Short came from Hamilton.
Very much so. He went to McMaster, did he? Westdale High School. He went to Westdale High School. Oddly enough, and I love that Martin Short actually helped me get my scholarship to Humber College in Toronto. for acting, writing, and performing.
So you have gone to college. A college let you in.
I was asked to leave high school after year five. My principal my principal pulls it out. He goes, look, this is how many credits you need a year. Okay, this is what you have. We're not doing this another year. You got to get the fuck out of here. This is like 3 months in. And then they start to come revisit the torture that I've put the school through for courses a year. And indirectly.
You stayed just to annoy them.
I didn't have anyone else to go. There was no like, oh, you know, I quickly realized. I remember one kid because it was a shop school. What do you call it?
Where you learn to do
trade school.
Yeah. We things call it with your hands.
Coconut College, Dum Dum School, all this stuff. There was two male school and one female school. The female, all the chicks were 6 months pregnant in high school. There was like a baby care center in this high school. It was fucked. And there was our school, and then there was another school, Albion. So it was Parkview and Albion. I don't know what Albion is now, but it was like, it was awful. It was awful. Anyway, what was the...
The question was, what are your comedic references?
Ah, Martin Short.
But that is incredible because
I would say, yeah.
You're very much not like each other at all.
Not at all, but that's fine though. I appreciate things that I'm not. You know what I mean? If I can see
But Sam Kinison.
Sam Kinison is, you know, I was raised
who
by
was
a preacher.
That for someone who doesn't know?
Sam Kinison was like, he's up there, you know? He's up there. He's in the,
with Bill Hicks and...
Yeah, yeah, totally. And just for his, he was a real deal wow man. And unfortunately, he died after he'd gotten sober. And
after
you know,
he got sober?
Yeah.
I thought Coke killed him.
No, it was a car accident.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I still mark his birthday down in my calendar notifications to see some true rebels in a, you know, it's like.
So who was Sam Kinison? If you were to describe him to someone who's never seen or heard of him.
Explosive.
He yelled a lot.
He did. And you know, on paper, as you would see a Stephen Wright or an Emo Phillips, Sam was very much the yin to that yang. Where even some of the, you know, there's very few iconic bits on his thing, but what he did was very poignant, as is Dice. You know what I mean? I was lucky enough to have Andrew Dice Clay introduce me on his special for Showtime. I got to do probably my best performance to date on someone else's show, and was definitely the last time I do any guest appearances on anyone else's shows. I've been lucky enough to do things on HBO and as part of an X-rated TV horseshit package. To have Andrew Dice Clay introduce me and then rock that room, so much so where they had to recut the show. If you see the special in its entirety, Dice comes out and there's two mics on. The guys following me were a double act and they had to recut the show. So there's continuities askew there, but my set was so strong and bold. And, you know, I was from another trajectory. People were totally, you know,
I've seen you. I love you. That's why I have you on the show.
Sure.
Because you're one of the few living comedians I know that I consider. I consider you one of the best, at least crowd workers I've ever seen in my entire life.
I appreciate that. And that's from growing up in a hostile environment to develop that skill set to be able to deal with, you know, serious people that are not really set. They're not wired to laugh. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's shameful to them. It means they lose
vulnerability.
Yeah.
Totally. And so I had to create a scenario that was so horrific that they couldn't ignore it. And it was even worse than anything they'd wanted to do to me. I'm like, you want to see? I'll show you. Daddy's got a whole bag of rattlesnakes and baby heads in here. I'll shake it all out. That's why I get a little fucky with young comics. I do comedy like you. And I go, no one does comedy like me.
No one does.
I've looked. Yeah. I've went everywhere. And my special's coming out this year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that at the end of the show anyway. You have to have some fucking faith in me, Jason.
I get it. I get it.
So did you idolize Sam Kinison and Lenny Bruce?
No, I didn't even really, Red Fox and these like, I just remember parts of my family that had like, and just people in general would have records that you're not supposed to play. That's where the bad records are. And we're like, what the fuck are the bad records? I want the bad records, you know? So these people that were, had these kind of rock star villain status, I was like, oh, that's how you be the Rolling Stones. That's how you be Led Zeppelin. That's how you be Black Sabbath.
So you started imitating.
And no, in the very beginning, Jim Carrey was probably the most influential comedic person.
Also a Canadian.
He is from 20 minutes from where I grew up. He's from Aldershot. They say Toronto, but he spent a lot of time working in a factory when he's 15. In Aldershot, shitty factory.
A lot of American comedians are Canadian.
A lot of American comedians are Canadian. Very well, that's the Swede in you. You're very fucking Alan Key, and then we'll turn that around, but it all has to fit together, you fucking weirdo.
Well, Mike Myers, Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Lorne Michaels is...
Yeah, Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Kids
you were
in the Hall.
Absolutely.
Trailer Park Boys.
Definitely.
All Canadians, yeah. That's the only thing we have.
Norm Macdonald.
Fucking right, Norm Macdonald. Holy... shit. Come on. I can already see the blood came back in your face. Yes. Who doesn't?
Absolutely love Norm Macdonald.
Holy shit.
His special, me doing stand-up from 2011, I think is probably one of the best specials ever made.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I haven't seen yours yet.
No, we're getting
to that. Because you were 25 and you moved to Vancouver and you started dating Seth Rogen.
Here's our son. It's Baby Yoda. Are you happy, you fucking nerds?
We are. Trust me, we are. On behalf of all nerds, we are very happy.
I moved to Vancouver when I was 22, and I started comedy when I was 20. June 26, 96?
I can't tell you what date you started comedy in what year. I barely remember my own life.
All right.
So you moved to Vancouver to get out of your social circle, and then you start doing comedy.
Changed my environment. Started doing comedy. I didn't know what was what. I'd seen some... In Canada, there was... A&E at the Improv equivalent, which was comedy at Club 54, which was like Burlington. That was the next town over for me. And I kind of grew up on this show. I'd be on late at night on the kind of just in the province of Ontario. It was a very East Coast centric late night comedy show. And Ben would go up and host it. And there'd be some Canadian acts and some American acts. And I didn't know there was Canadian comedy. Like, to see, this guy's a regular, blah, blah, blah. He's originally from Calgary, Alberta. And he come out, and this guy with a Canadian accent would start doing comedy based on Canadian sensibilities. And Montreal Just for Laughs Festival. But what I'd seen, a lot of it was corny and kind of, come on. And I get it.
It was bland.
But I didn't know that there was these kind of rules. Like, there was the Sam Kinison records, and then there was, like, the late night TV sets that you might see on Carson, but outside of the late night talk show, some of them be a little more edgier. You might hear fuck there or sexual reference and stuff. And then these records like Red Fox and Lenny and so on, Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy, you know, Eddie Murphy, love that, you know.
He's getting back into comedy.
Please, Eddie, save us from ourselves.
You think he will?
Chappelle's been carrying a hard weight, and he needs some...
So, but is Seth Rogen Canadian, by the way?
Vancouver.
No, for real?
Yeah, man.
Okay. So you started doing comedy. You were in some sort of competition with him?
No, it was a workshop. And I'd procrastinated. And I really put myself in a position of humiliation because I told people I was doing comedy already to give myself some sort of a social exile if I'd... known as a liar. And I went down to the club that I heard. It was the Punchline, or Punchlines? Punchlines in Gastown. And I went and it closed. I was like, no. Oh, no. I'm fucked. I've come out here. I've told everybody I'm doing comedy. And I guess it's over. You know, I'm going to really just stick to my job at the so-and-so. I really don't know. And then I looked into the Yuck Yucks comedy chain. And then when I searched the comedy club, they had all their comedy clubs. All of their comedy clubs, except three, were in the province that I grew up in. So Ottawa, Toronto, Windsor, Mississauga, London, blah, 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 all these clubs. I'm like, oh, dude, there's only like an hour from each other at the most. From Hamilton down to
London. But now you're in Vancouver, right?
Now so I'm in Vancouver.
On the other side of the country.
Other side of the country. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I've got a one-way ticket and a fistful of cash with my crazy friend who's since become an actor and finally pulled that together because there's a lot of procrastination on both parties because we came from a working-class environment. And there was none of that. You know, I hid the idea of it from my family for like 2 or 3 years until I started to get on television, won some awards and shit. You can't really see that on TV. Like, what's
no,
that?
Mom, no, that's not me, Mom. It's just some guy who really looks like me, has the same name and says fuck a lot.
That's not me. That guy's smiling. again, you're going to have to reboot these questions back to me or I just...
No, you're in Vancouver. You're 25. The place that you wanted to do stand-up has closed down.
And I'm horrified.
Yes, because you've lied to all your friends and said you're in comedy.
I said I've been doing it and I'd have something coming up. Now I really don't know. This is like, you know, this is 95. And there's no real smartphones then or no, none of that shit, right? Yeah.
Nothing.
There was no. I never knew.
Practically no internet.
Yeah. And then we made our own horseshoes. So I found out there was a number or something. I called there and they said, no, the club out of business, but there's some other comedy clubs. I went back to the original source because somebody had told me or I saw a sign about a workshop at this other club and then ended up going to the Yuck Yucks in Vancouver. Which was at the old Olympic Expo 86 grounds. And there was a nightclub. I'll never forget this too. The Yuck Yucks Comedy Club. So I found out the guy had moved the workshop to the Yuck Yucks. He said, oh, this new guy's doing it. He's doing it over here at this other club called Yuck Yucks. So I went in, did this thing. There was a half a dozen of us. And... I remember meeting Seth and I have a videotape of the showcase with Seth. And anyway, he went off and made movies, I think.
I don't know.
I don't. And, And then I did my first gig and just really had a kind of epiphany. I go, okay, this is the shit I want to shovel for a change. I never liked the boss. I never liked authority. I never liked getting up early, yet I only sleep for maybe 6 to 7 hours a night because I know that those other time I have to, you know, I've been my own manager and agent for 15 years now since I left Europe. And so there's a lot of hours and day. As beautiful as this is, like people should honestly, like the view from this, we're literally in a spaceship over a giant wedding cake. It is delicious.
I will explain it in the introduction.
Yeah, it's stellar. But this is every place. I live just over there.
Yeah, I know.
It's fucking retarded. I live next to a park that looks like Jurassic Park.
And yet
park.
It took Ming like 8 minutes to get you up here.
Ming was doing his best. He was he was doing damage control in the car. And I respected him for that. How are you? It's a little busy out here. I can see how he's got that 5-star rating. And his accent was terrible. It's everything that you thought stereotypically could be. But, you know, A for effort, Ming.
So you do a workshop. You showcase, you start off, and then you become, because you're still a AAA rated comedian in Canada.
Well, that's the thing. There was a rating system, you know. Well, I go back to Hamilton and live on my mother's couch for like a year so I could have the flexibility of eating up 10 shows. You know, I was doing like 30 shows plus a month. I tell comics, what advice can be? I go, do comedy 3 nights a week. For a year and a half, and then ask me another question. because I can't tell you anything between then. You don't know if you're fucking facing the stage the right way. I can't help you tune your shitty guitar. You know what I mean?
I don't even know if you have a guitar.
Right? Yes. Yeah, it's true, right? So I was speaking metaphorically, but that's definitely an issue. I remember a comic telling Ron Beaudry saying that he goes, why don't you get another guitar and you could use those both as crutches? The kid went up, did Adam Sandler songs, destroyed this college pub.
Oh, really?
Yeah, destroyed it. Girls wanted to fuck him. Guys wanted to be him. And then an old road dog from Canada goes, get another guitar. You fucking hack. And then all the kids like, fuck you, mister. Like, fuck you. Yeah, anyway, I love that.
Because I was 25. I hadn't started doing comedy. I was doing a foreign exchange student here in Canada at University of Western Ontario.
That's right.
And I went to a Yuck Yucks. I didn't even know what a Yuck Yucks was.
Wait, year is this?
This is 2002, Jason.
2002. This is just before I moved to Europe.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So you saw it?
I saw you, yes.
Now, was this up at on Yonge Street? Of course, it was Yonge Street.
Yes.
Yeah. That's where I laid down the law.
Well, you had one good joke, I remember.
I bet.
I still remember.
I bet.
It was about your friend who had gone to a psychologist and to try and get medicine because he heard voices in his head. And then you just start yelling, those are thoughts, you idiot! Those are thoughts. You're hearing thoughts. Because you also informed the audience that they weren't bad voices. It's not like, kill the baby.
It was
like he could stop in a shop window, see his reflection, hear the voice in his head say, you look good today.
That was a good time. You saw me at a good time. I was probably a little schizophrenic at that time because I just I was in college. No, that was 2000. I was just lost. I think I was reveling in my complacentness of having no opportunities. I'd run out of things. But
you made it quite quickly in Canada, didn't you?
I was the fastest headliner in the history of
Canadian comedy. A very short history.
And I only say that because I can bookend that with I won like a Gemini Award, which would be considered like an American Emmy Award. I don't know why these Canadian-American comparisons, but it was the highest. The only person that had won that award before me was Jeremy Hotz. And Jeremy Hotz was the first.
Is he also Canadian?
Yeah, he's yeah. Ottawa.
No, in Sweden, no one would know him, but I actually managed to download his special when internet was new.
Yeah,
Jeremy's I liked great. Him a lot.
He's the king of Montreal, you know, of like galas and a legend, and helped me get my immigration lawyer. Around 2002, I saw him in Bally's Fitness at the Eaton Center in Toronto. And I was just like, people were taking pictures of me on public transit and like asking me for autographs and shit. And I'm broke, you know, and I'm fucking, I just won this Gemini Award. And I'm like, even my mentor and friend, Mark Breslin, put his arm around me. Like I won this huge award for my television special. And Mark put his arm around me. He goes, if this was the States, you'd have four agents, two managers, and a whole bunch of development deals, people trying to. And I became.
But it was Canada. So
it was Canada.
You just got the award.
Just got the award. It
and then they sent
nice.
You on your way.
Yeah. It's like, you're good. Go sit on the bench. And I'd had Lorne Michaels' attention from being nominated for this Phil Hartman Memorial thing. And but when I started to see this Saturday Night Live camp and various agencies poking around me at that level of Canada, yet I couldn't go to the States because I had an ex-girlfriend call U.S. Customs on me. And that's why I moved to London, found out my ancestry, grandfather, English, grandmother, Irish. My grandfather's birth of Grimsby, England, just outside of Manchester, if I remember.
So then you moved to England for like 10 years.
I moved to England for 6 years, just about 6 years. So that gave me the immigration lawyer. Shout out to Ralph Aaron Price. He's done a lot of Canadian comics. Harlan Williams, another Canadian.
I don't know Harlan Williams, sorry.
Cop who drank the piss in Dumb and Dumber.
Okay, I do know him.
That's what I love about this business. Who is it? Oh, you know, the guy who drank that piss in that movie. Oh, which guy? I know four of those guys.
No, I remember that scene. He just lets them drive on.
Yeah. Yes. You get the hell out of here, man. Yeah. Anyway, Harlan's great. So, and he has one of these views too.
And he got that view from drinking piss in a movie?
He totally, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
How did you get this marvelous view of Los Angeles, Harlan?
He's done a bunch of other stuff since.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Totally. It looks.
So may I ask you, because you do one of the darkest comedy sets I've ever seen in my entire life. It's like
it's funny too.
Super, super duper dark.
It's horrifically hilarious. Yes. I like the look. I like the, you know, the context of, like, you know, Evil Dead.
I do know.
And the demons in the basement, and she claws up through the door, and then the guy fucking jumps on the latch, and the comes down and blows the fucking eye out, and it lands in the guy's mouth. There's two people in that room, laughers and not laughers. And I love that.
Divide.
It's a great divide. And you could see relationships separating in the audience. Yes. And I think there's three shows going on. There's me, the people who've never seen me before, and the people who've come to watch the people who've never seen me before.
Yeah. I know.
And it is like watching. It's like a
50-minute. It's exhilarating to watch you perform.
I like to create the slowest stillborn birth with a laugh track behind it for 50 minutes.
Tonight when we both perform, I want you to go up after me because I do not want to follow you.
Oh, I'll that probably be, bomb.
Yeah, I hope so.
No, it's actually, the improv... I really like that club. It's the closest thing to home, it's the American blueprint of stand-up comedy.
Yes, but we're not in the main room now. We're in the lab.
That's fine. It's like being at a Starbucks where there's no espresso machine.
The lab has weird energy, does it not?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like,
and then you go up on stage and it gets weirder.
Well, yeah, because that's a very personal place. That place, you know, you can, people are so sensitive here. Ugh, I'm going to throw up.
That was actually my next question. Because you do the darkest comedy I've almost ever seen. I mean, there are a few of us.
I always show up where they don't want me.
Yes, but have you noticed in the last 10 years or so that PC culture is getting worse or better?
I think it's folding over on itself. Now, I don't know if it's going to spin out.
Like it is going to spin out,
I can
tell you.
It has to spin out. But that's where nature and chaos come into play because fucking a tsunami there, a fucking fire there. People start to get their shit lined up very quickly. A genocide over here, you know, it starts to move closer to the eye of the pyramid, people are going to start burning down these castles. And people really like their homes around here. But if it goes Mad Max and then fucking aliens show up, I don't know.
Well, that was coherent.
I'll have a translator. What Jason's doing?
Jason is probably just staring off into the future, which in his case is always apocalypse tinted. Now, what I was going to... So, okay, so let's try and focus.
This is a goddamn trial.
Let's try and focus again. So, in your opinion, what is comedy?
I'm comedy.
Yes, but I started out by asking, who are you? What are you? And now you didn't want to explain that, and now I'm asking you what comedy is, in your opinion, and you say, you are comedy. I accept that. I believe you might be.
Yeah, I'm in it.
You are.
All the time.
I know. It's impossible to get you serious for long enough to conduct normal fucking interviews.
I hang out with crazy people on so many levels.
I see it as crazy people are hanging out with you.
Totally. Because I don't shame them. As long as there's respect, they can be as weird. And
this time around, this is the fourth time I'm to LA. I always go to the comedy store. You're always there. Mm-hmm. This time, the first person you introduced me to calls herself Miss Cunt Puncher or something.
Oh, Tokyo Cunt Punch, yeah. She's a hooker and a comic. I think you said
what's
hooker.
The difference?
Yeah, tell me about it. Except I push back.
So you think that PC is ending now? So what's the state the state of comedy here now?
Listen, PC, call it fucking whatever. These banners are just getting people to get positioned under a fucking sinking ship. Like,
what do you mean by that? I'm not trying to get you into trouble. You usually manage by yourself.
I'm bulletproof. my opening act is a black...
I'll take you to a gun range tomorrow and let's test that hypothesis.
I'd love to go to a gun range.
To test the hypothesis that you're bulletproof?
No, I mean like outside of bullets.
So what is the state of comedy here now?
State is whatever people want to perceive it. I don't really use their compasses and tuning forks. Is it? I have my own shit.
No, I know you have, but you have to have some analysis of what's going on, don't you? I mean, when you go up, how many anti-Trump jokes do you do?
I don't even discuss it.
No, of course not.
I don't even.
You're talking
never,
about fisting.
I never.
So who has
about,
time for Trump?
I never talked about Canadian politics. There was no. That was those political. listen, I deal with it on a one-to-one basis personally. A lot of these people that have spoken about morality and in comedy and they're. They're really looking at they're policing the wrong thing.
Why?
Because the comics are the only not fake news. You know
but
what
we
I mean?
Say lies on stage, don't we?
We totally see lies. And then there's always a up for, it comes down to the intent of it, you know, and some people's intents are malicious and clearly there to aggravate them. You know what I mean? But they're not comedy world has a good way of policing itself globally.
Yeah, I would say it does because you know, either you make people laugh or you don't.
If there was some people doing unsavory things maliciously, you know, they get exiled, man. They get pushed out. Oot. So that climate is always changing, though. But that's like a thermostat that I can observe and adjust accordingly. But I don't see it, though. I don't see these lines that everyone's drawing. I've never acknowledged them. They were never part of what I wanted to do.
Nor should you. If you are comedy, you're supposed to jump lines.
Totally. And those lines, because I don't acknowledge them, that... the intent is always genuine. So I have no concerns about what the other people are doing. Aaron's interviewing a vampire right now.
So the cameraman just came into the podcast.
Yeah.
And when a camera is pointed at Jason, he starts performing.
It's instinctually. But yes. We are... but I answered your question.
Did you? Do you remember what the question was?
Yeah, what do I think of the climate of stand-up comedy? And it varies, you know.
So
from city to city, everyone has their kind of you know, superstitions and politics and ideas, but I've gone out of my way to be so globalized on my own steam so that I had a more of a broader sense of really what was going on everywhere. And from dealing with my friends that are local comedians, they're very in tune. Like, you know, I asked you about what's going on in Sweden right now and how fucked it is. And I'll go to you tenfold before I go to any respectable media source and get a more realistic view on what's what.
Sweden is on fire right now.
Yeah, I know. And that's what really surprised me, because it was like kind of a second home for me for a long time. And I still consider it is. But, you know, my opening act had a hard time getting into the city. I had to cancel a gig in Malmo.
Why?
Because me coming back into Sweden to do the Malmo gig, because my opening act had been questionable for whatever reason. That they gave him a real hard time and weren't going to let him in the country. Well, my name had been brought up, and I didn't want to risk the gig that I had at a music festival to go and do some gig in Malmo, so I had to cancel.
All right.
Unfortunately. And I think I've canceled gigs maybe fucking 3 or 4 times in over 2 decades.
Yeah.
So,
but do you think they pushed you into canceling the gig?
No, I didn't want to risk the fact that I couldn't show up for the big music festival in Denmark the following day. So I had to go into Sweden and then come back, do it. And I didn't want to risk this big gig that they had been paid for. You know, they'd taken good care of me. And as much as I, you know, I have no career moves of doing.
So how come? Because you lived in Sweden, but you did your special in Denmark.
I did my special in Denmark.
Why?
Why Denmark?
Why not Sweden?
Oh, fuck.
Tell me.
That'd be like, that's almost worst case scenario.
Yes. Do you understand how hard my job is, Jason?
I get it. That's why I'm giving you the time of the day. I get it. You know, it's a hard, we got some, everyone's got some big lifting to do before we are our demise. I can see it coming, this tsunami of horseshit. My head hurts. What did you say earlier?
No, I said you chose, even though you lived in Sweden for many years, you chose to record your comedy special, your first full-length comedy special.
No.
No, your first foreign comedy special.
Yes.
Or your first Danish comedy special in Denmark and not Sweden. Why?
Because
you lived in Sweden.
I did.
But you recorded in Denmark.
I did.
So why?
Because Sweden sucks for comedy.
Why?
Because of what we were discussing earlier, this overcompensation at the expense of, like, feelings and vulnerability. I get it, you know.
You think it's that or the fact that we just don't have freedom of speech and can't say whatever we want?
Look, if I start talking on a subway in Slussen or something on a Sunday, people will turn around because they hear a voice, opposed to, it's just culturally, it's not... Yeah, it's too busy. Look at white girls in their 20s hate me.
Why?
Because I pull my cock out and put it on the window of their car.
You do not.
Damn it, I used to.
No, you didn't.
I have.
Well, maybe once, but it was a guy in the car. So you did record it in Denmark and it went well, right? Because Danes are laughers.
Danes are wild. And I told, there's actually a joke. I go, the best way to get somebody from Denmark to like something is tell them that somebody in Sweden hates it.
But and it's true, is it not?
They go, yeah, that is very true. He knows. Yeah, fuck them. Yeah. They think you're, you know, they go, the guys are kind of queer. And, you know, they're just, they're the
and nice. A bit stiff.
They're totally stiff. Look at your furniture.
But the Danes have very stylish, clean design furniture as well. So.
You know, look at Iceland is a spice. I'm slipping into various dialogues here. And I smell burnt toast. I think that's from a stroke, isn't it?
A stroke or a brain tumor.
Look at Finland.
Finland is great, isn't it? But they're not Scandinavians.
Yeah, but you're like a wizard to those people. You know.
What do you mean? I love
you
Finland.
Like them. Oh, I love them. Hey, Finland's got like, this is a part of the reason we're talking about Swedish comedy. Finland has like 4 comedy festivals.
Yes. Even though it's a much smaller.
Sweden has none.
Yes.
Denmark has a good one.
Yeah.
Probably will be more.
And you've been to Norway, right?
Many times.
They laugh there.
I'll be in Norway the first 2 weeks of June.
But you're not coming back to Sweden.
I'm going to be in Sweden. I'm going to come and see you fuckers. In the middle of June, I'll be in Sweden.
But will you perform?
I'll probably do an open mic. I'm not interested. I look at it as a holiday and to hang out with my buddies and be around some... Because the...
You come to Sweden to not hear the sound of laughter for a while.
No, but yet there's very good pockets of fans that I have, like loyal fans, you know.
I know, we have a death metal scene.
That's right, right? I remember you...
I'm not sure they think you're doing comedy, though. I don't know what they think you're doing.
At yeah. my roast, yeah. Google, how many people here have a job? Put up their hands. They took a Jason's fan.
It was a good roast.
It was great. Great. And, you know, I remember Bamberg and all that. It was yes. cool. It was cool. It was very funny. Yeah, and I wouldn't... It was just everybody on there were all my friends, so... I love Bamberg calling out Pritchard from the audience. You have to kill Al Pritchard if you want to work in this town now. Bamberg goes, I don't know if... No, yeah, anyway. Because of the overcorrection of safety and standards and things, that's what I'd like. That clinical aspect of it, if Swedish culture is something that I enjoy in the summer.
In the summer.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the summer. I've done enough.
And not for comedy. Winters.
And not for comedy. You know, I can kind of go at my leisure and so, oh, you come down and we're going to do this, that. And I do a couple of rounds of people who showed me love when I'd first come there, you know. But it's not a career move or a moneymaker yet. The money that I accumulate through Denmark, I've sold like, I don't know, 20,000 tickets, maybe more collectively. You know, I had the first tour we did there, we sold second to Jerry Seinfeld for international stand-up comics. It's probably the half a dozen comedians that had come there from outside of Scandinavia. But that Zulu, and I think it was Magnus Batner had made a reference. They were looking for international guys to do the Zulu Gala at the Royal Opera House. And I was kind of the staple guy until Al showed up, yeah. started his family. It was good timing for me. I got out and he took the clean, you know, family-oriented comedy and to the next level, which very much was compliant to the Swedish disposition, where I was like into like the black metal aspect of it.
The art form.
They are either or. But Denmark was always a wild place. Like, and my audience is way more diverse. It reminded me of all the cool parts I liked about Canada in one city for the most part. And they were very welcoming. And it just, I had done that Royal Opera House show at the Zulu Gala, and this kid fucking messages me, hey, I didn't know he was a child until I got off the fucking airport. He's like 21. He's like, I'm going to book, are you interested in doing a tour? And I'm like, I'm here, kind of just moved to LA. I'm trying to establish myself here. And he says, well, blah, blah, blah. I think we can do this, this, and this. And I go, that's great. But listen, if you meet my bottom line, I'm willing to go into business with you and see what show sold out. Showed up and applaud Mr. Cohen Wolf, Jonathan, my business partner and friend, who's I've almost had nervous breakdowns and tell him I'm too nervous to go on. He spent like weeks promoting, setting up interviews and flyers, taking very well care of me. And without his hard work, we wouldn't have done all those great things.
So, what's the name of the special?
I think I'm going with Svin.
With what?
S-V-I-N, pig.
Okay, pig. Why?
Because I think the word pig, in my mind, is like a... Have you ever seen a John Waters movie?
Not sure.
Do you know who John Waters is?
Not sure.
He did Pink Flamingos with Divine, with that transvestite who ate the dog shit off the ground.
Pretty sure I haven't.
It's kind of like a you could probably articulate this a little better than me, but like somebody who just rolls around in their own shit.
All right. Yes.
So I've taken all of the things and ideas and made them into my own toilet, and I'm rolling around in it. You can look if you want.
Oh, I will look at your.
No, I mean that generally to anybody. You can look in my toilet.
I'm sure I could. You still send me a lot of poopy pictures.
I have like 3 photos on my phone. Anybody who knows me, it's Boomer's asshole.
Yep. The woman who has eaten poo.
Which there's been a long debate whether or not it's a woman. We don't even know what year it is. With the glasses, are those, does she play racquetball or some sort of?
No one knows.
No one knows. And yeah, so Mrs. Shit Whiskers, Boomer's asshole, aka the gaper, and what's the third one? Probably an old cunt or something like that. It looks like a werewolf's bullet hole. It's really bad.
Yes, it is. So Swine, that's the name of your comedy special.
Big. I thought about a different names and ideas and stuff. I want to keep the simplicity of it. I love the single word aspect of it, and it looks cool on paper.
I'm sure it does. And when does it come out?
There's a lot of things that are in transition right now. It will be out this year.
Okay.
I'll tell you some things off camera I can't really discuss right now.
Okay, but it's going to be probably on the Children's Network.
Children's Network, you would think it's even better than that. We get to that anyway.
All right. So, and you were in a movie now?
Recently? I did a movie, yeah. I did a horror movie where I played a serial killer who kidnaps an all-girl punk rock band and I cut their fucking arms off and their leg. Yeah, it's pretty brutal. It's like Saw meets Joan Jett and the Wild Hearts or whatever, you know.
Hmm.
It's
put cool. Another dime in the jukebox, baby.
When I'd done my television special early 2000s, there was this young man who'd come to my shows and he said he'd worked in various films and television. I just got a good vibe off this dude. And I said, I think we're going to do a horror movie together. And then 15 years later, something like 15 years later, we're doing it. So I spent a month on set. I almost went crazy, man. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. It was exhausting. It was like, it really helped me because the girls that were in the band, the actresses, they were legit. They were legit. And I learned a lot, I think, about me as an artist. And about women that can do shit on another level and be fucking cool. I'd never really seen that because the comedians is at that level. You're dealing with a mishmash of like exceptional talent and mental illness.
Yes.
All spiraled into that. But these people are so crazy. They're super sharp. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They totally got. So luckily, the actresses that I'd done scenes with the most really did some hands-on coaching with me, and I remember feeling a little lost after coming. Now I've done this movie. Now I'm headlining. It was the same week, a month that I was getting ready to do my stand-up special. So it was the movie. Then I had to cram in 6 weeks of stand-up gigs and then go to Denmark. So I'm still dealing with the aftermath of being in a big factory for like weeks, chasing people around with fucking axes and sawing their arms and legs off. It was mental.
What's the name of the movie?
It's called Spare Parts.
Good name.
Yeah. Oh man. And then it's the last week before I go to Denmark to shoot my special. I got a couple warm-up gigs and then we shoot 2 shows on the night, middle of December or October. Yeah, December. In Denmark. And the police have come to my show the night before. There was a fist fight at the door. And I was on fire. Like, I'd just come out of crazy town. And now I'm doing this serial killer style of stand-up comedy now. Because I'm still trying to shake off the old Andy Kaufman mojo shit, right? And so the special was good. The first taping was it had holes all over the place. I was still fucking bugged out because I had to do some last minute adjustments. I had some financial investors back out and had to finance this whole thing myself and play director and so on and so forth. So it's killer, man. It's killer. It's the fucking hardest shit, man. Like, especially with the editing aspect when you get to play God with yourself.
Yes.
And I've pulled the string out and I've cut all the knots out of it.
It's super tight now.
It's super tight. And it's from go. There's no turning back.
But you won't tell me where it will be aired.
I can't. Everything's because there's. I have to learn how to keep my mouth shut sometimes because there's money involved and I don't care about it. So the people that do get a little pissy. But yeah, it's going to be cool. So there's. I have to do this other thing, part of this thing in April. So realistically, at this point right now, it might be out in maybe a Mother's Day.
What? When is Mother's Day?
I think it's in May. Okay. Can you Google that?
No.
I think I'm going to
We're having a conversation.
In May.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
At this point.
All right.
Unless I get to do... Anyway, I can't... I'm talking too much.
It's fine. I think you did well for an hour.
I did pretty good.
Yes.
I did pretty good.
It was a serious conversation. You made almost no jokes.
The fact that the sun was going down was like, you ever put a blanket over a birdcage?
Yes, they
That's
fall
what
asleep.
Was happening here. So it was like a cold medicine. I was feeling lethargic enough that I could focus. But don't take it personally, Aaron.
Is there anything you think I forgot to ask you?
Not really.
No?
No. You know.
Well then.
The only thing I had to really promote is that special, which I have a podcast called Jason Rouse's Safe Word on iTunes that I do periodically, randomly.
Where and, you're even less coherent.
Oh yeah. I don't like people. I'm not out. I force myself to go out. That's why I came up here and did this. Make sure my headache still comes back.
I love you, Jason. I want to thank you for, you know, being here for me on the Constructive Critique.
Well, I appreciate that. And I've always respected your intellect and your sense of humor. And, you know, I remember meeting, I want to say it was the Blue Moon in Stockholm. I think one of the early Raws shows in that basement. And I remember sitting in the green room and I'm like, I think this is my buddy.
I was out on stage, wasn't I?
No, you were sitting in the green room. You had your notepad and you're going over. I think I made some comment and you said something to the effect like, this is called preparation or something. And I was like, rock in Sweden, bang, 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 you know. And you're like, man, just this is preparation. And that was the end of that.
Yeah, I am a bit stiff.
I appreciate that stiffness, though. But, you know, a lot of people really throw out a lot of frivolous communication, and you want to be impressed.
Well, tonight we are performing both at the
Improv. I know, that's great.
Yes, it is.
I wouldn't, you know, that's what I love about this shit. We're here in a palace in the Hollywood Hills, and we're going to go with the fucking OG comedy club at the Hollywood Improv on Melrose Avenue tonight. With our friends doing what we love. It's like, have you made it? I made it, man. I made it.
I would say you did. Amazing. I don't know about me yet, but I'm still 10 years younger than you are.
Thank you for listening to Deconstructive Criticism with this episode's guest, Canadian comedian and enfant terrible, Jason Rouse. If you want to know more about Jason, I suggest you check out his website at www.jasonrouse.com. Links will be provided at aaronflam.com, which you will find in the description of this episode, regardless of platform you're partaking of this podcast. I want to thank you who supports Deconstructive Criticism on Patreon, via PayPal, Bitcoin or Swish, 0768-943737, 0768-943737. And if you haven't donated yet, please pause this podcast and do it now. if you want something more material for your support, other than the warm, fuzzy feeling you get from giving me monetary aid, I suggest you surf onto aaronflam.com, where I sell wonderful t-shirts with uplifting messages like crush socialism, and on the back it says socialism is evil. And then I've sort of dotted a heart underneath just to make sure that you understand that we're out for crushing ideas and not people. Or you can get a t-shirt with my podcast's motto, "Your feelings are hurting my thoughts." If you read Swedish, I also suggest you order a copy of the book, "This is a Swedish Tiger." So far, you can only get it in Swedish, but the translation into English will be done in the coming weeks. And I'm searching the heavens and earth for a publisher in England, the US, Germany, Denmark, Norway, and the Netherlands. Something I'm pretty sure I'll be able to find, considering what a bestseller the book has become in Swedish. The second edition is now sold out, and if you're looking to buy a copy of the third edition, I suggest you place your order now, since they are selling like hotcakes. Thank you again for supporting my work. Two more interviews in English from LA will be released in the coming weeks. Next up is Thaddeus Russell. I am Aaron Flam. Until you hear from me again, have a good unit of time.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.